Good afternoon, everyone.
Well,
I've been here 5 months, and I finally get to talk with you. I want to thank everybody for your warmth and making me feel at home. My son, for the last 10 years, wanted me to move to London, Ohio, where he lives, and I just couldn't do it. You know, the housing market, just the bottom fell out, and I didn't want to give my house away, so I had to wait till the prices went up, and then I moved out there. My son and I went on a cruise in South America. Maybe you're wondering where I was for a couple weeks. And I wanted to mention something about that. I was on a bus. The day after the election, I was on a bus going into the heart of Buenos Aires. And I heard two ladies on the bus, and they were speaking broken English. And the one lady turned to the other, and she said, "The world has changed in the last 24 hours. And maybe you don't realize how concerned the rest of the world is." And, people on the ship from Germany and England would corner me and say, "What do you think of what's happened in America?" They're frightened. And what I think is happening around the world is that nationalism is coming back. You can see that in Germany with the elections they've just had, not the major elections, but over in what's the country next to Austria? In Austria, Nazis have a lead there now to take over that country. And in France, same type of thing. But it's interesting what's happening around the world. Well, I don't have a title for this sermon. I'll just call it The Elderly. The Elderly. That's all of us. Daryl made this for me here this week. I have a hard time seeing anything far away. If I can get this down without making a clunk. With my glasses on, I need those for driving, but I can't see far away. I mean, I can't see close up. When I take them off, then I can read, but I have to be within about this far of my eyeballs to read it, so putting this up here helps. Too slow to get off the bus, too slow driving down the road, and too slow to die and get out of the way. Too often, that is the perception of the elderly through the eyes of the younger generation. More and more, Western civilization and culture is failing to honor its senior citizens. In 1900, there were 3 million people in this country over the age of 65. Now, that wasn't that long ago, and you think of it, just 3 million people over 65. By 1987, that category of citizens had jumped to 23 million. And just 13 years later, in 2000, that number had doubled to 45 million. As the baby boomer generation has reached 65 in 2010, that number really escalated. In fact, the number of people 65 or over in this country is estimated to be 70 million by 2030. That's just 13 years away. 70 million people, that's almost a quarter of our population. Even in the United Church of God, those over 65 comprise a large and growing percentage of the total membership of the church. We used to talk about the old folks. And the years have flown by, and now, by and large, we are the old folks. In this sermon, you'll hear me say them, referring to the elderly like it's not me when it really is. But there's a generation that's ahead of me. You know, people in their late 80s and 90s are old enough to be my parents, you know. But people younger than me will look at me as the elderly, and rightly so. So sometimes I'll be saying them and us, so that's why. How does God view the elderly? And how does he expect others who are younger to view them? Perhaps more importantly, how does God want us to view ourselves as we attain and pass through this late autumn and winter seasons of our life? This sermon will address these subjects because God in his word has given us important principles to know and to apply in this vital area of life. This is an important subject even for the young people here, because unless you die a premature death, you will one day be a senior citizen. I know that's staggering to think about, but it's true. Youth is certainly fleeting, and growing old is a natural process that God ordained right from the beginning. So many scriptures describe our temporary sojourn on this earth. I'll just list a few rather than us look at them all. Job 14:2 refers to it as both a fading flower and a fleeting shadow. 1 Chronicles 29:15 calls it a short pilgrimage. Psalm 78:39, a breath that passes away. And Job 7, verses 6 to 7 describes this life as being swifter than a weaver's shuttle. James 4:14 says life is a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. And Psalms 90:10 tells us that the typical life lasts about 70 years. Our bodies change as the decades fly by, and we pass through certain distinct stages of life. It was never in God's plan that we stay young our whole existence. It was always in His plan for that to happen. We are all like clocks that have been wound up, and relentlessly, slowly but surely, our life force is relentlessly winding down. Exactly what does God expect of the younger generation towards senior citizens? First of all, God expects them to grow, to show honor and respect. I'm still having a hard time seeing this. I think if I had a light, that might help, but I know we don't have a light here. So he first of all, God expects them to show honor and respect to the senior citizens. Turn to Exodus, the 20th chapter. Exodus 20, verse 12. God says, honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you. And, you know, there's no time limit stated here. We were always to honor our parents, no matter what their age. Turn over to Proverbs 23:22, because it adds that. Proverbs 23, verse 22. It says, listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old. So again, we ought to always honor our parents. A son or daughter must always honor and respect them. And it's not only towards parents, but due honor and respect is to be extended to all who are elderly. So let's look at that. Leviticus 19, verse 32. Leviticus 19, verse 32. It says, you shall rise before the gray-headed and honor the presence of an old man and fear your God. I am the Lord. And that doesn't just mean little children, but if somebody comes into your presence and you're seated and they're quite a bit older than you, you know, we should stand and greet that person, not just, you know, how you doing, you know, from our seat. To honor means to place a high value on something. For untold centuries in almost every culture around the world, grandparents played an important central role in family life. But in this country over the last century or so, that role and relationship has been fragmented and greatly lessened, especially in the last 50 years with our mobile society. Our very mobile society produced children who hardly know their grandparents in some cases. They live far away from them. But another factor is that older men and older women are not honored for what they have accomplished over a lifetime. Often they're just seen as simply an old person instead of that unique individual that God created with an equally unique story to tell. There was a poem that was found a number of years back by some nurses. I can't remember, I used to know, whether the nurses worked in a nursing home or in a hospital. But there was an elderly lady there. I don't know if she had a stroke or what, but she couldn't talk. And so, you know, they would talk to her, but not much. And so it was just, they did their duty, you know, washing her and taking care of her, feeding her. She had to be fed. And it wasn't until after she died that they found a pencil-written note just in a piece of paper, all crumpled up and stuffed there in a crack near the bed. And here I have a copy of the poem. It's just called Old Lady's Poem. It says, "What do you see, nurses? What do you see? What are you thinking when you're looking at me? A crabby old woman, not very wise, uncertain of habit with faraway eyes, who dribbles her food and makes no reply when you say in a loud voice, 'I do wish you'd try,' who seems not to notice the things that you do and forever is losing a stocking or shoe, who, resisting or not, lets you do as you will with bathing and feeding the long day to fill. Is that what you're thinking? Is that what you see? Then open your eyes, nurse. You're not looking at me. I'll tell you who I am as I sit here so still, as I do at your bidding, as I eat at your will. I'm a small child of 10 with a father and mother, brothers and sisters who love one another. A young girl of 16 with wings on her feet, dreaming that now a lover she'll meet. A bride soon at 20. My heart gives a leap, remembering the vows that I promised to keep. At 25 now, I have young of my own who need me to guide in a secure, happy home. A woman of 30, my young now grown fast, bound to each other with ties that should last. At 40, my young sons have grown and are gone, but my man's beside me to see I don't mourn. At 50, once more, babies play round my knee. Again, we know children, my loved one and me. Dark days are upon me. My husband is dead. I look at the future. I shudder with dread. For my young are all rearing young of their own, and I think of the years and the love that I've known. I am now an old woman, and nature is cruel. 'Tis just to make old age look like a fool. The body, it crumbles, grace and vigor depart. There is now a stone where I once had a heart. But inside this old carcass, a young girl still dwells, and now and again my battered heart swells. I remember the joys, I remember the pain, and I'm loving and living life over again. I think of the years, all too few, gone too fast, and accept the stark fact that nothing can last. So open your eyes, nurses, open and see. Not a crabby old woman, look closer, see me." I thought that was quite a poem to illustrate the fact that each person is a precious individual in God's sight with a unique story to tell. For a man or a woman to take on the responsibility of marriage and a family, and to faithfully fulfill that role in their proper role in society, is something worthy of honor. The fact that God expects the younger generation to show honor to them is doubly true in the church. Every congregation of our church is blessed by having stable seniors in it. This one's no exception. We have a lot of stable seniors, been around for a long time here. What if there were no older members in this congregation who had been around for 30, 40, 50 years? What if you were new in the church and you had a Bible verse that you wanted to know what it meant, and you went up to somebody and they were only around maybe 3 years and they'd scratch their head and say, "Yeah, I always wondered about that one myself." We don't have that. But what if there were no members who had been around 30, 40, 50 years? What if there were no, as someone once termed them, battle-hardened veterans, those people who have survived the wars that Satan waged against the church over the last decades? We need to appreciate these older ones among us who have grown in grace and knowledge and discernment over a lifetime in the church. I can remember a funeral about 15 years ago, maybe 18 years ago, somewhere like that, and I was asked to speak at it. The man's son and I did the service, and since I was probably his best friend at the time, I spoke. There was more people at that funeral than I can ever remember. And by that time, there must have been, 30, 40 Church of Gods in existence. And a lot of people from all these Church of God groups came. One man was there. He was the only member of his Church of God group. He started it. And then all the people left him. But he was there because this man meant something to us. He and his wife had been there right from the very start of the church there in the Baltimore area. And afterwards, I was talking with a group of people, and I said to them, "Do you know what's happening here?" I said, "Do you understand what's happening?" I said, "A whole generation is passing from the scene." I said, "These are the people that were here for us right from the very beginning. And that's why there was such a respect shown to this man. And because he had been there and he had laid down his life as an elder for these people." And I termed these people the Maryland patriarchs and matriarchs as well. And I said to them, to the people, "You know, these people have been with us right from the beginning, and now they're passing from the scene, you know, over a period of about 8-10 years, the number of those people in that area who are original members had died. And, you know, full-time ministers come and go, and I'm not downing that. That's just the way it is. But there's something to be said about a man or a woman who, over a lifetime, loves and serves his brethren from the heart. There's something to be said about that. Doesn't matter whether elder, deacon, member, doesn't matter, you know. They fulfilled their role and they gave purely to other people. And again, we see that here. You have them here, the patriarchs and matriarchs here in this area too. A number of them have passed away. I think of Mr. DeVilblis and others before him. I remember giving a sermon on church history one time, and the oldest baptized member I could have a record of in the state of Ohio was Susan's father, who died here, I think last February, was it? Somewhere right around there. And people met him down in Big Sandy in 1957. He had been baptized several years then, but there may be others over near Akron that I don't know about. But there's something to be said about those people that have been here for you all along. Again, some of those people are still here and a vital part of the congregation today. Turn to 1 Timothy, the 5th chapter. First Timothy 5, verses 1 through 3, we'll read. First Timothy 5, verse 1. Says, "Do not rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father, younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, younger women as sisters, with all purity. Honor widows who are really widows." And so, again, God gives us some instruction how we're to relate to people who are by themselves late in life. And again, it's something that we need to take to heart. When is the last time you truly honored a widow or a widower? We focus on the widow, and rightly so, but I have observed that the elderly men are often neglected at the feast. I see them go back to their rooms after each service, and many of them don't have the means to get out and rejoice to the full with others as they did in years past. And yet these are the ones who have borne the bulk of the responsibility of providing the financial resources for this work in this church over many, many decades. I have known many of them who have wiped out their entire bank account several times so that this work would survive. And if people hadn't done that, it would not have survived. And not only men, but women. I know a woman who was baptized in 1957 in a very remote area. And in the early years, I mean, she was as poor as could be, but she would take a Greyhound bus 150 miles or more to church services in Baltimore and back again. And she didn't know anybody in the church. Nobody in her family was called. And she remained fairly poor all her life. And the only reason I know the rest of this story, somebody observed that and told me about it, is near the end of her life, she was a widow. And she didn't have enough to put in the offering on a holy day. And they actually saw her take her gold wedding ring off and put it in the offertory because she wanted to give more. But again, we don't sometimes know what the sacrifices people made in the church back in those days. Again, is it right for them to have made such sacrifices? And then in their twilight years, be largely ignored simply because they went to a feast site where few, if any, people even knew them. God expects the younger generation to show honor and respect to the senior citizens. That's point one. Point two is, second point, under what God expects from the younger generation, is that he expects them to learn from the senior citizens. He expects them to learn from the senior citizens. Let's look at that in Deuteronomy, the 32nd chapter. Deuteronomy 32. Verse 7. Deuteronomy 32, verse 7. It says, "Remember the days of old. Consider the years of many generations. Ask your father, and he will show you, your elders, and they will tell you." So again, it's talking to the young people, saying, ask. If you wondered about what happened, you came in the middle of the movie, you're wondering what happened in the first half, ask somebody that was there, you know. And God expects the youth to learn from the oldest ones, to learn the things that they have learned and experienced in life. Turn to Job 12. We'll read Job 12:12 as well. Job 12, verse 12. It says, "Wisdom is with aged men, and with length of days, understanding. The elderly are, on average, smarter than we are in the things that really count." I was always amazed growing, or even when I was 40 years old, how much people knew. You know, they had a lot more knowledge than I did, and not just a few of them, a lot of them did. They've had far more experiences in life to digest and learn from. Can you imagine how much wisdom and knowledge the men before the flood had when they lived 900 years, you know, or even Abraham, you know, they accumulated all that knowledge and all that experience. When I was about 9 or 10 years old, running with the little kids in the neighborhood, you know, we always wanted to have fun. And there was a big apartment building up on the corner. And we would go in the backyard and we'd run around and we'd run up on these. Remember how they had old-fashioned cellar doors that went up like on a slant, you know? And we'd run there and this old man named Walter, who could hardly move, he was so old, he'd come out and he'd chase us. Well, that was half the fun because Walter couldn't catch us. We knew that. And after doing that a couple times, we thought that was fun, you know? One night, Walter knocked on the front door of my house. And my father opened the door and talked with him. And my father came back to me and really, really yelled at me and said, I told him we were just having fun. And he said, "Don't you realize," he said, "that man was looking out for your life?" He told me those cellar doors were rotted, almost rotted through. And he said he was afraid you would fall into the basement. Well, I didn't realize that. I thought he was just a mean old man that couldn't catch us up until that point. And that was a real awakening. And, you know, by the time I was 14 or 15, Walter was like a grandpa to me. Both my grandfathers were dead. The one just got to hold me right before he died. The other I hardly knew. I can just barely remember him. But sometimes Walter and I would just sit there on his front porch and watch the world go by, not saying anything. But lots of times he would point things out to me of things that were happening in the neighborhood. And I knew he knew what was going on in so many areas. And but again, you know, I remember the day he said he was too old to take care of the apartment building, that he had sold it. And I was sad to see him move away. But back in those days, by the time I was 15 or 16, I really appreciated the input of people that were older. Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, where I grew up, was a city of big porches. There was no air conditioning in those days. And I would take walks, and I would wave to older people everywhere, you know. And one day that sticks out in my mind is when I was 16, I was walking down the street under a huge railroad trestle with a double track about 20 feet up there. And I made the left-hand turn on Furwood Avenue, it was called, over towards Willow Street. And there was a house on the corner there, And it had a wraparound porch. And I'd always wave to these people. Their name was Snyder, I found out. I always thought it was a husband and wife, but it was a brother and a sister. And they were born in that house. They were in their late 80s at the time. But they were born in that house. And they lived in that house all their lives. And I happened to engage them in a conversation that night when I was 16. And, you know, it was like entering a time machine. I'll never forget that night. I've thought about it so many times since. It was like entering a time machine because through their mind and memory, I was transported back to the 1880s when they were children. And, you know, I gained knowledge that no other person my age even knew. From my grandparents, I knew that that whole area had been an orchard, but they told me their house was the only house in that vast orchard. I mean, covering maybe a mile by a mile, you know. And they said, they sat on that side porch because it was beautiful under these huge, huge trees. I'm talking about trees with trunks bigger than this whole area here. Now, I always thought they were hundreds of years old, but I found out later trees can grow that big in 70, 80 years. And especially poplar trees. But these were a special variety of poplar that got huge. It went up about 125 feet, but they were huge trees. And I knew the railroad was built in 1909 because it had a plaque there. But they told me that night, they said, "We remember when that railroad wasn't there." And I go, "What?" You know? And we remember when those trees weren't there. There was a church building right here. And then they started telling me about all the things, that, the whole neighborhood. And like I said, it was like me being in a time machine and I'm looking around in 1880 or something, you know, and seeing about my neighborhood. And so, you know, that was a precious memory to me, along with talking with some of those other older folks. Too often young people value the advice of their peers and discount the advice of older person who really knows them and who really loves them. Rehoboam made that mistake. Read about it sometime in 1 Kings, the 12th chapter. He went to the elderly for counsel, those who had given good counsel to his father, Solomon. And then he went to the young men for counsel. Well, he followed took the advice of his peers, and both he and his people suffered greatly for that. The nation was permanently divided. A similar thing happened in the church some years back. An elderly, wise patriarch died, and children, mere children, spiritually speaking, took it upon themselves to make doctrine, to decide what was doctrine. And the result was the same in the days of Rehoboam. Upheaval and division. So there are many practical reasons why God expects the younger generation to listen to and learn from the older generation. The third and last point pertaining to this area is that God expects the younger ones to love and help the elderly. God expects the older ones to love and help the elderly. Let's look at that in James, the first chapter. We'll read James 1, verse 27. I'll give you a few seconds to get over there. Verse 27, "Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble and to keep oneself unspotted from the world." Young people need to show a real interest in the senior citizens that attend Sabbath services with them. You know, get to know all about their lives. Get to know about them and what they have accomplished in that lifetime. Many times older folks face an identity crisis at the end of their days. You know, people up in their 80s and 90s. For a man, those friends who saw him hit that big home run when he was 16 years old are all long gone. And perhaps for a woman, perhaps it was that older sister or best friend who came to be with her there at the birth of her first child and now has Alzheimer's and cannot relate to those stories, you know, all the things they shared back then. And so all the pivotal and important experiences and accomplishments of life are no longer able to be acknowledged and shared in a deeply personal and meaningful way. It can be a very lonely time for sure. I can remember I used to do insurance audits, and when I would go to Ocean City, Maryland, there was a place there where It was one of these old-fashioned resorts, you know, and it had all these big rocking chairs up on a porch. Well, nobody was ever there during the day, and I would sit there and just look out at the ocean and all, and I remember sitting there one time, and an older man came out the door, and he sat down about two chairs down, and so he started talking after a while, and finally he said, "My wife and I came here," he said, "every year for like 35 years. And, you know, what do you say to somebody like that? He was hurting. And so all I said is, I said to him, "Well, you must have some really wonderful memories here, don't you?" And he shook his head and he said, "Yes." Not a whole lot else was said, but sometimes that's all you have to say. And he understands that he shared something with another human being that was important. But again, that love must be put into action, because the elderly certainly have needs. Just read the first seven verses of the 12th chapter of Ecclesiastes sometime. It mentions trembling hands, fear of heights and falling, dimmed eyesight and hearing, insomnia, and a host of other conditions that afflict the elderly. It makes it very plain from this description of old age and its many shortcomings that the elderly have needs that can and should be met by the younger ones among them. What are the obligations, or what are our obligations as seniors to the younger ones among us? What does God expect of us? First of all, God expects us to teach them. God expects us to teach them. Psalm 71:18 shows our responsibility here. Let's look at that. Psalm 71. Verse 18. Verse 18 says, "Now also, when I am old and gray-headed, O God, do not forsake me until I declare your strength to this generation, your power to everyone who is to come." So this writer there, whether it was David or whoever it was, he says, "Until I declare your strength to this generation." You know, I can remember telling a lot of people about miracles in my life and what happened, you know. And other people have told me of miracles in their lives as well. And one lady that I talked to recently, I always call her twice a year, Days of Love and Bread and Feast of Tabernacles. Well, she lives in Indiana. She's flat on her back with Parkinson's disease. She's right at the last stages. She can use a phone, but she can no longer use her computer. And we were talking just a few weeks ago about a miracle that happened. She was on her way to church services, and she saw a dog who was getting thinner and thinner. He was chained in an industrial area, and nobody was feeding him, apparently. So that Sabbath, she brought food, and she gets out of the car, and she goes over to feed him. And just as she's bending over, she hears a car stop, and she looks around, and here is four young guys got out of a car, and she said she could tell what they had on their mind, and it wasn't good. And she said they came coming over to her, and then all of a sudden they just stopped and said, "Where did the," I won't say the word, "where did the blank go?" She said, "God made me invisible." She said they were standing right there looking at me, and they were saying, "Well, she couldn't have gotten, how did she get out of here? There's no place to, we would have seen her." You know, they were just dumbfounded, you know. And she said, "God made me invisible," you know. But it's things like that that we can pass on to a younger generation to help build faith in their lives. And, there was something else I was going to say here. I am having a senior moment. But again, it shows our responsibility that we can pass on things to others. Let's turn to Deuteronomy 4, verse 9. Deuteronomy 4, verse 9 says, "Only take heed to yourself and diligently keep yourself, lest you forget the things your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. And teach them to your children and to your grandchildren." So there's a direct thing that God says we're to do. You know, the other verse showed it was our responsibility. And God says right there in Deuteronomy that we have an obligation to pass on some of the wisdom and some of the lessons that we've learned in life. As older people, we can share our life's experiences. If you're over 80, 85 years old, you have lived through exciting times, hard times to be sure, but exciting times, to say the least. You know, people in this room have gone through the Depression. They've gone through World War II. They've gone through a lot in this life. This younger generation has little or no idea of the tremendous sacrifices your generation has made, of the hardships you have suffered in your life, all for their sake, you know, for their children, and you, now you, the grandchildren, great-grandchildren of these people. Also, in accordance with the responsibility to teach the younger generation, shown here in Psalm 71, we can pass on to them some of the central truths of life that we have learned along this journey through life. You know, sometimes truths learned the hard way through great suffering and hardship. In other words, hard-won wisdom and truth. Truths in the form of common sense thinking. There's so little of it nowadays. You know, you talk with young people, they just don't have any common sense about money or anything. And truths in the form of interpersonal and relational insights. Truths in the form of better ways to accomplish a task. You know, lots of times people know of better ways to do things, and it falls to the ground, and people don't benefit from that. Sometimes truths in the form of simple right and wrong, just to name a few areas of instruction. I won't turn back there, but Job 12:12 has already shown us that our wisdom should be increasing with age. It said, with the ancient is wisdom, and in length of days understanding. And it's a wisdom that can only come by means of time, trial, and experience. There's precious little teaching done today by the oldest members of our society to its youngest. Some years ago, Jay Leno of The Tonight Show, during his Man on the Street interviews, asked some young people questions about the Bible. The first one, he said, "Can you name one of the Ten Commandments?" He asked two college-aged women. One replied, "Freedom of speech." He said to the other, "Complete this sentence. Let he who is without sin," her response was, "have a good time." Leno then turned to a young man and asked, "Who, according to the Bible, was eaten by a whale?" The confident answer was Pinocchio. It's a sad day when a culture fails to pass on truth, truths large and small, from moral instruction to the common sense use of money. It's easy to see the effect on our society. The elderly in this country tend to be more moral, have higher values, and possess more truth than the generations that are following them. An example of this, when I was preparing this sermon a couple years ago, I had been at it for a couple hours, I guess, and I thought, I got to get out and take a walk. It's a nice day. So I went out and I was walking, and I'm on the sidewalk, but there's a gas station here. You know how that is. They still have the sidewalk, and for the car to come out, it has to pass through the sidewalk. And all of a sudden, I hear this horn, beep, 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 and somebody, young kid, screaming, "Get out of my way!" I looked up, I couldn't believe it, you know. And so I walked over to the car, and I said, why were you beeping the horn? I'm just walking down the sidewalk. Well, he wouldn't even look at me, and he swerved the car and took off so fast, I thought he was going to lose control of the car. And about 15 seconds later, I come to the end of the block, and a man had pulled up and cut off. I was just about to step onto the street. And then he looked up and he saw it. Now, this man was probably about 45, 50. And he looked up and he said, "Oh, I'm sorry, sir." And he backed up, you know. And I thought, within 15 seconds, two contrasts. It really, here I've been, you know, writing on the subject just a couple minutes before that. But it really made an impression on my mind to see that, you know, to see that. We can never let down on our responsibility to pass on the godly culture we have been taught. We've each been called by God to be teachers now, in the world tomorrow, and beyond. Our initial training ground was the children God gave and entrusted to our care. He didn't intend for our teaching to end there, because He designed life for us to keep teaching. Our children, our grandchildren, these little ones among us in the church, and any who would respect us enough to listen to what we had to say To the day of our death, we were always to be teachers. Teachers of good and important things. Transmitters of truth. I don't know how many people I have met over the years where it was their grandmother or grandfather that taught them the truth of God. And their parents never were members or never went this way of life, but they continued on. I know people in the United Church of God now who have told me that. But it just shows that it seems like truth is most effectively transmitted into the human mind when there's a framework of love and respect there. And that's what you have with a small child to his grandmother or grandfather. Turn to Titus, the second chapter. Titus 2. We'll read verse 1. Titus 2, verse 1, it says, "But as for you, speak the things which are proper for sound doctrine." This can be translated wise as well. That the older men be sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith, in love and patience. The older women likewise, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, just what I mentioned, teachers of good things. Verse 4, it says that they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers. And that can be managers of the home. It can be managers of the home or ones who keep the world out of the minds of those in the home under their care. Obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. Likewise, exhort the young men to be sober-minded in all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works in doctrine, showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility. And so it goes on. It shows that we have a responsibility there. Our approach should never be one of meddling. I'm talking about you and with your family now. We don't want to do that to other people's families. They will probably resent it. But again, something that's respected and always appreciated. An example of this, I think, was when I visited Columbus, Ohio, before I moved there. This was about 12 years ago. And there was a young man there in his late 20s, and we got on the subject of marriage. He was hoping to be married. He hasn't found the right one yet. But I said to him, I said, "Do you want some good advice from me?" And he said, "Do you have some pearls of wisdom for me?" That's exactly what he said. I like that. And I said, yes, I do. And I said, make sure you have three things before you marry. I said, first of all, you must be inspired by her character, her personality, and her beauty. I said, in that order of things. And I said, if you don't have all three, don't marry her. And I said, and another thing, you won't be just marrying her. You'll be marrying the entire family. And a number of you are sort of giggling. You know what I mean. You don't think of that when you're younger. You're actually marrying the entire family in a sense, you know. And you have to consider that as well. We need to impart our knowledge in a way so that our young audience will want to know more of what we know. Sometimes our role will just listen, you know, just listen to what they say, or to empathize, or if the opportunity arises, to throw out that pearl or two of wisdom. I remember one time, it wasn't that long ago, there was a little boy two doors down, and he was on his bike going nowhere, and he was like grumpy. And as I was walking by, he said, "My mother and father won't let me ride around the block, and I'm 8 years old." He said, "Little Johnny, he's 7. He gets to ride around the block." Well, I wasn't going to feed into this, you know. So I said to them, I said, "You know, when I was your age, I didn't even have a bike." I said, "In fact, I never had a bike." And he looked up at me and he said, "Didn't they have bikes back then?" And I guess he hadn't got to Orville and Wilbur Wright in history, because they ran a bicycle shop before they built airplanes. But again, sometimes you have to understand the world, the mindset, the worldview of the young ones that you're talking to. You have to understand where they're coming from. And I think I mentioned to several of you when I came here last May, right before I moved, I had gone to a yard sale and I bought this radio. And I was sitting in the driveway with it. I didn't have it on, just cleaning it up with a Q-tip. And this little girl, I found out from her mother later, she was 8 years old as well. And she comes riding by on her bike on the bicycle, and on the sidewalk, and she stops right there in my driveway, and she looks up, and a big smile comes on her face, and she said, "Hey, isn't that one of those old-fashioned music players?" And I held it up. I said, "Yeah, it's called a radio." There's only 200 billion of them made in my lifetime, you know. But, all she had knowledge of is music comes out of the computer or one of these little things this big, you know. She'd seen one, I guess, on TV and thought that's what she was seeing there. But, again, sometimes you have to understand where they're coming from, what their mindset is, and so you can guide the conversation accordingly. Otherwise, you may be losing them. It has been observed that youth who bond with an older person, especially a grandmother or grandfather, and if that older person passes on lessons from their life within a framework of love and respect, those youth are usually more settled about life and go on to make better decisions in life, all their life. All because they've been well connected to someone who's been there and learned from the experience, or in modern parlance, somebody who's been around the block a few times. When my daughter was in the fourth grade, the fourth grade teacher gave an assignment to all the kids. She wanted them to go and interview a senior citizen and write a report on what they said. Well, there was a lady in the church there that was in her 80s. Her name was Mrs. Whaley. And so we took Lisa over to her house, and Lisa went in and interviewed her for about, I guess, an hour. And it was interesting what she had to say. This lady had actually lived in the first decade of the 1900s. You know, that's when she was really young girl. And she told my daughter about something that frightened her more than anything ever frightened her in her life. She came out the door of her house. I think she lived in Seaford, Delaware at the time. And she was walking across the street. She was just a young girl. I don't know what she was, probably 7 to 10 in there. And she said she got in the middle of the street and something was coming at her fast, and she quick ran, and it was a car, one of the first cars she ever saw. Well, they called them horseless carriages because they looked just like a regular carriage that a horse would pull. Well, that scared her so bad. It'd be like us seeing a headless horseman or something, because how can this thing come at me so fast and there's no horse pulling it, you know? And she said she started shaking and she could hardly get back into the house. She was just so upset, you know, over the experience. Nobody had told her about cars, and that was the first one she ever saw. But years ago, we were told in that congregation to tailor some of our messages exclusively to the youth of the church. We had a church of 220 people there in Seaford, Delaware, and just slightly over 100 of them were under the age of 19. And during the sermon that I gave, the next sermon, I said to them, I said, "This morning, I have a surprise for you." I already told them this, that the sermon was for the young people. So this morning, I have a surprise for you. I'm going to present each of you with an encyclopedia. I said, and while I'm at it, I'll throw in a history of the last 70 years. And I said, "Okay, how about an encyclopedia, a 70-year history, and a repository of wisdom all rolled into one?" And I said, "The best part is you don't even have to read it. It's all stored on advanced memory chips that are voice interactive." And then I said, "At this time, I'd like all the senior citizens in the congregation to please stand." And they stood, and I continued. I said, "I present to you this unique group of individuals who are virtual walking encyclopedias, history books, geography books, travel guides, and the repository of almost everything you will ever need to or want to know and experience in this life. And it's all yours for the asking." I included that in my message back then because I had noticed over the years that there was very little communication and interaction between the youngest and the oldest ones at services. Now, here, that's not the case. I have seen a lot of you talking with the young ones, and I've seen the young ones come up and run over to some of you and hug you. I saw that 2 weeks ago up here. And so I don't want you to think I'm saying something negative. I see you putting that into practice here. That really is heartwarming to see. But I think it's still that way to a great extent in the church, and I think that's really unfortunate. It may be difficult and intimidating for a young person to go up to an older man or woman and initiate a conversation. And so often they miss out on one of their young life's richest treasures in the form of that stored up intellect and unique personality of the senior members of the church. One time when I, right after I moved to Columbus, I was there at a holy day, and a little 9-year-old girl from Mansfield came up to me, put her hand out and said, "Hi, I'm Katie." I was just so shocked. But you know, I became good friends with her. She's in college now. Katie Welsh is her name. A lot of you probably know Katie. But that was so unusual for some young person to do. And I took special note of her, you know, because here's somebody that's really very mature for her age. But again, it may be hard for young people that age to initiate this, but not for us. Not for us to befriend them and ask them about their interests in life to initiate a relationship. But unfortunately, the years pass and the opportunities fade, and we are all left poor for it, all because those rich treasures are never passed on from one generation to another. Teaching the younger ones is an awesome responsibility God has given us, but He expects even more from us than that. The second point under the area of what God expects of us as older ones is that God expects us to set an example for the younger ones of what a mature, godly man or woman is like. God expects us to set an example to the younger ones of what a mature, godly man or woman is like. Let's look at that in Titus, the second chapter. We're right here. Titus 2, this time verses 7 through 8. It says, "In all things showing yourself a pattern." Oh, I already did go into this. I didn't mean to when I read Titus 2, 1 through 3, but I saw that it went on and I already did read it. But we'll just continue it again. "In all things showing yourself to be a pattern of good works, in doctrine showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned, and one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say of you." Let's look at Zechariah, the 8th chapter as well. Zechariah 8, we'll read verses 3 through 5. Zechariah 8, 3 through 5. It says, "Thus says the Lord," this is a prophecy of the world tomorrow, "I will return to Zion and dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. Jerusalem shall be called the city of truth, the mountain of the Lord of hosts, the holy mountain. Thus says the Lord of hosts, old men and old women shall again sit in the streets of Jerusalem, each one with his staff in his hand because of great age. The streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in its streets." So here we see intergenerational harmony. We see young and old alike together interacting. And I won't turn there, but if you mark down Jeremiah 31:13, it's also talking about the millennium. It says, "Then shall the virgin rejoice in the dance, and the young men and the old together." So it shows here in two prophecies of the future how much intergenerational harmony will be a part of a godly culture of the world tomorrow. I stated earlier that God expects the younger ones to show respect for the older ones, and that's true. But respect is a two-way street. We as seniors must always show respect to the younger ones as well. From talking to various ones who have grown up in the church, and a big part of this congregation is people who have grown up in the church, you know, been around for 40 years or more, 50 years. One thing, I don't think I ever mentioned it last year when I saw the 50th anniversary picture, it showed a lot of you had been young people in the church 50 years ago and are still here. That's really admirable. Because there was another 50th anniversary picture in there right about the same time, and there was only 4 people in that. And I knew 2 of them, and They didn't even attend the United Church of God. Neither did they keep the Sabbath. But they showed up because they were a part of the original church, and they wanted to be there. You know, which is nice that they came. But again, only two there, and that was a large church as well. And now, you know, so many of you that came. But again, from talking of various ones who grew up in the church, I find that some of them feel, and I think justly so, that sometimes not enough respect is paid to them as individual Christians in their own right. Even into adulthood, they're sometimes inadvertently referred to as the Jones boy or the Smith girl. Maybe some of you had this happen to you. And they can easily begin to feel as though they're being looked down on as some kind of second-class Christian. And that's not true. That's not so. And I can remember in another area where an older man would always refer to this elder as by his last name. He wouldn't use his full name. He'd just say, like Hanley. Well, it wasn't me, but he'd say Hanley, you know. And even though that man is a full-time minister, pastor in the United Church of God, that should never have been. That should have never happened, you know. That man should have had respect for him, like I said, as a Christian in his own right. But again, a proper respect for them as a person, as a Christian in their own right, must begin long before they become adults and always must be there. There was a true story some years ago of a 13-year-old boy who was very talented with computers. I think they made a movie out of it based on his story. A computer expert, nearing the end of his career, heard about this young man and gave him a lot of valuable manuals that he could have never gotten on his own. He also spent time teaching him, and the young man was able to just leapfrog ahead in his understanding and his abilities in the computer area. Even at a tender age of 13, he realized just what this man had done for him. And so he wrote a letter to this older man of a deep appreciation, and he closed the letter by saying, and I quote, "I can never pay you back for all you've done for me, so instead I will pay you forward." A reference to this young man's resolve to help another generation after him in some special way as had been given to him. That should be our attitude, to give of ourselves to one of these little ones, not because we have to, but because we want to. And that's where the bonding between generations occurs. That's where it comes in. Many a young life has been touched and changed forever by an older man or woman who took the time to make a difference in the life of one who arrived on this planet much later than themselves. They may never have realized that they were making an important investment in that young boy or girl's future, but they certainly were. It doesn't happen just like in movies like Karate Kid or Secondhand Lions. How many of you have seen that movie, Secondhand Lions? That is a great movie. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend that. I don't recommend movies, but that one was good. It shows just what I'm talking about here. But again, it doesn't just happen in movies. It can happen right here and now with each one of us. Back in the 1980s, when I was raising two children by myself, an older widow in another area heard that my son was into rock collecting, and so she knew somebody was coming to our congregation, and she sent a huge box of highly collectible rocks that her late husband had collected and gave them to my son. My son never forgot that, and neither did I. When you give to somebody's children, you're really giving to them as well. But I never forgot it either, because about the same age, age 12, I was showing a neighbor lady my fledgling coin collection. She was an Italian lady named Mrs. Fiore. Her and her husband never had any children, and she was probably in her late 40s at the time. And she said, "Wait here." And she disappeared, and then she came back out of the house, and she brought me these old coins. And one of them was an uncirculated, it was just shiny new in plastic, 1916 quarter. I mean, they're the old type quarters, you know, that you don't see anymore, Liberty quarters. And gave this to me. And I couldn't believe this lady had done that. You know, she had done that. She said she had been saving that since she was a young girl. You know, does that kind of giving even exist on this earth anymore? I hope so, you know, but I was really touched by that. I never forgot it. And each of those ladies, the one that gave the rocks and the one that gave me the coins, each of those ladies gave much more than just some physical object to a young person. They gave part of their life and part of their love away as well. And in some small way, it helped change the world of a young person. When I was in my 50s, I went back to that town, and I didn't know. I just assumed that lady had died long ago, but I found out she was alive and up in her 90s. And so I went over to her house and knocked on the door, but she wasn't home. Either that or she was asleep. The screen door was, the door was open, but the screen door was there. And so I thought, well, I'm coming back in a few months. I'll see her then. Well, I did come back in a few months, but by that time she had died. And I felt so bad because I really deeply wanted to tell her just as she, I wanted to tell her how much I appreciated that, but I also wanted to tell her that just as she had kept that coin in uncirculated condition for 40 years, so too had I kept it in uncirculated condition another 40 years, and I never got to tell her that. The third and final point in this second area is that God expects growth in the minds of the elderly. God expects growth in the minds of the elderly. We must be constantly moving forward, both mentally and spiritually. Even though the physical housing around our minds is wearing out, we have to keep moving forward. Let's notice that in Psalms, the 92nd chapter. Psalms 92, I believe this is the last scripture I have, I think. Psalms 92. We'll read verses 12 to 14. Psalms 92, verse 12. It says, "The righteous shall flourish like a palm tree. He shall grow like a cedar in Lebanon. Those who are planted in the house of the Lord shall flourish in the courts of our God." Now, verse 14. "They shall still bear fruit in old age. They shall be fresh and flourishing." And so, again, it shows that that's what we need to at least strive for, to be bringing forth fruit in old age. It's our minds that are of prime importance to God. It's our minds, not the perpetuation of our physical existence. This entire process of maturity from youth to old age is a ripening process for the mind. We're first fruits, and that fruit has to be ripe for God to be able to use it. Older folks who stay active inspire us. I remember doing audits in Ocean City, Maryland again, and there was a lady who was at age 90 who was running a hotel down there. Her husband had died some years before, and she just kept going on. Her three daughters would come there in the summer to help her because that was a busy season, and I was very inspired by that lady. CBS News has, over the years has run some specials, too, that were very heartwarming. One was a man, they went and interviewed him. He retired at age 101 from a company. He had only missed one day of work in the 69 or 70 years with the company. It's got to be some kind of record. But the one I really remember is they interviewed a 78-year-old man still working in a business, and the interviewer said to the man, "When are you going to retire?" And he said, "I can't retire. My father's still working here." And the camera panned into the front office in back of him, and there was his 106-year-old father, who had started the company like 80 years earlier, working at his desk. Now, they showed he came in at 10 o'clock every day in a chauffeur-driven limousine, but he came in every day, and he worked, you know, he worked. And I always remember that one. But even though most of us won't be able to operate at that level of productivity, what is important is that we never allow our minds to stagnate as we pass through this exciting journey through life. Read, learn, grow, develop. You know, never allow the advancing years to lessen your enthusiasm, your example, your courage, and your fortitude. Be as engaged and productive as you're able to be in all aspects of life, physically, mentally, emotionally, and especially spiritually. We've all heard the saying, you only go around once in life. I suppose we could rephrase that to say, being a senior citizen is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Be sure to make the most of it. Fully savor the entire spectrum of these God-given experiences, understanding that there is great value at each and every stage and stop in life. All too often, death and distance rob our youth of the vital and enriching relationships that God designed grandparents to provide in a young person's life. A mother or father can't quite fill that same role that a grandmother or grandfather can. And so today, that role often goes begging in so many young lives. The Church of God operates as a loving family, and those bonds of love can flow from the oldest among us to the youngest and back again and help fulfill a lot of needs, both the seniors and the youth life. Young people, reach out to the seniors in your life all your life long. Honor them, respect them, love them and help them. And learn from them more about your world than you ever dreamed possible. And as you tap that vast storehouse of wisdom and knowledge and experience that is yours for the asking, you will in the process make a friend that you will never forget. Seniors, in this crowning time of life, in these golden years, fulfill your God-given role. Keep growing mentally and spiritually. Look for ways to and opportunities to make a positive contribution to the lives of our youth. Love them, respect them, set the example for them, teach them and help them on their journey through life. They'll never be able to pay you back, but as that 13-year-old boy so eloquently phrased it, they will surely pay you forward.